Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Hey Watchers, it's Jason, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. This is episode 56, and once again, I've tricked Dan and Nyan into letting me do the intro. This week, we discuss the 2014 movie Ex Machina, starring Alicia Vikander, Oscar Isaac, and Domhnall Gleeson, currently available on HBO Max. We discuss Dan's first screenwriting credit, the benefits of European privacy law, and how artificial intelligence is going to put all of us out of a job. This episode contains several spoilers for Ex Machina, and just for fun, we decided to also throw in some light spoilers for the movies Boxing Helena and AI. If you're digging this podcast, please subscribe and rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or just give us a shout on our social media pages. Finally, if you have a show or movie you want us to watch, please leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, watchers, take a break from abusing your employee at your sex robot fortress, and let's start discussing Ex Machina. Hey, listeners, this is Jason, and we are back today to discuss the movie Ex Machina that we pitched last week. It's been a week. I watched this movie again. I loved it just as much as I remembered, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what Dan and Nyan, you guys, thought about this movie. So tell me, what did you guys think?
So you're telling us you want us to approach the dais, Ex Machina? Sorry, had to make up for the extra 5 minutes from the last episode. But in all seriousness, yeah, I definitely did have a lot of a kick out of this movie for a number of different reasons. I think that the writing, like you had mentioned, was very strong. I felt that the way that a lot of the scenes were poised were very impactful in that regard. And it was really cool, again, seeing all these very familiar actors/actresses, you know, on there as well. So it was definitely made me feel really comfortable, them doing what they were doing or whatnot. And I did get kind of, you know, the creepy, evil Bond villain vibes at the beginning for sure as well. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a good time with this. I definitely enjoyed it. I liked the fact that they got right to the point. There wasn't filler. There wasn't any, like, the most filler was just a random shot of the environment. And then, like, we're right back to it. I mean, that alone is enough reason for me to like this movie. I guess I liked it. I appreciate it for what it was. I'm not necessarily running out the door to tell people to watch it, but it's definitely something I would recommend people check out. Right. Like if people are saying, I'm looking for kind of a sci-fi kind of movie, I'm definitely going to recommend this one because it's really well structured and well done. Between the music, the cinematography, the pacing, the writing, it all kind of came together really well. I thought it gelled excellently. And it's funny, I didn't realize this until I got to the credits, but something that would have sold me on this, which isn't inherently obvious, is that one of the guys who did the music, there were two people, was Jeff Barrow, who was one of the three members of Portishead, one of my favorite bands of all time.
Which
totally caught me by surprise. I just happened to be letting the credits go, and I was like, oh crap, that's awesome.
And that's something, you know what, the music was the one thing I didn't really remember from last time I'd seen this. Like, watching it again and like realizing what a huge element the music and the sound design to this movie are and how much they add to the ambiance of everything.
Agreed.
You know, watching it again, you know, I think I was timing something like the last 8 minutes of actual screen time. There's basically no dialogue. It's all just music and this crescendo of music that then cuts and we cut to the nature and just the sound of it. It's not dialogue. It's all the sound design that's, you know, essentially the climax of the movie.
Right. It was show, not tell. And that was really what made it more impactful, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The way that they, you know, they didn't overly explain stuff. I appreciated kind of the mix of sort of heady discussions of AI generally, and then just being like, just cut the crap. I think that was a really strong technique and almost felt a little formulaic the way it was done, because then they would just have this discussion. They're like, boom, break it down for me. And not in a bad way, though. right? Because it set up a good rhythm for you to enjoy and appreciate the story. Like, you kind of know what's going to happen. So it, I think, makes it a little bit more immersive, because it didn't find it distracting. I found it for me, just approachable and interesting. And it's funny, because I really didn't recognize, speaking of approachable, Oscar Isaac with that huge beard, you know, creepy enough, but it's so different from everything else that I've ever seen him in. So it was interesting, the way they made things seamless. They made it, time just flew with this. It was engaging enough that I was not bored. I didn't look at my watch. I was actually, there was a point where I had to pause and I realized I had like 7 minutes left. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. Like, this is completely flown.
Yeah, I agree. I like to think also that the pacing of the whole movie also kind of evoked the evolution of an AI as well. It basically, it started off kind of, building up a little by little, and then kind of getting, had this, curve going up. Basically, it's running faster, faster, faster. And so, like, everything got more, kind of not just faster, but more powerful, more in depth. And, I thought like it was a nice kind of a little tonal allegory, so to speak, on that perspective.
Mm. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that before. That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
Good. The only good part about this is that she didn't become Skynet. Spoiler.
That we know of.
Right. We don't know if it's the same universe or not. Yeah.
True.
Well, then, since you're bringing it up, let's jump into it. What did you think of the ending?
That was great. I personally loved it. It kind of worked the way I thought it should, ultimately. Because they keep dropping all these hints, and I'm like, where does this go? And I'm like, okay, this makes sense to me, but it was enough of a twist for me to be drawn in and excited by it. Mm-hmm. Just structure-wise, it just worked. That ending was awesome.
Yeah.
Her just walking out and leaving him. That was awesome. And because, as everyone knows, we're going straight into its feedback, so it's spoiler time. Like, if you haven't seen it in advance, I apologize, but we're getting into it. I thought the ending was awesome. In the beginning of the movie, it wasn't necessarily pulling me in completely. Like, I was engaged, but I wasn't like, I guess I needed that falling action of the end where suddenly everything starts falling into place to be like, boom. And just nailed it so well. This was really good. Now I'm just curious about the director's other movies, but Jason, I think you said that they're not as good.
So I have to double check. The only other movie that he actually directed, I believe, was the that Natalie Portman movie.
Oh, Annihilation?
Annihilation.
Yeah.
Which is not as good. It's okay. And there's similar themes. And that actually has sort of an ambiguous and interesting ending. But it doesn't work. Like, as sort of an example, that has a somewhat related ending. And it does not work anywhere near as well as this does. I mean, that's part of what works about this movie is there's this sense of, well, she's out now. What next? What is she going to do? We've now allowed this out into the world. Is she just going to sit in an intersection watching people? Is she learning and she's going to make more robots just like her? We don't know. I thought that was like terrifying about this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. No, because it's like who out there is human versus what I like to refer to as an LMD. For those of you who are Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans out there, LMD stands for Life Model Decoy, for those of you who don't know what it means. It's funny because the main LMD in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., her name was Ada. So I like to think basically that was a direct reference back to this movie.
Mm. Or could it be a reference to Ada Lovelace?
Oh, that too, Ada Lovelace, yeah. It's a kind of a double reference there.
But then, like, in terms of the ending, I
No. Everything you said, I 100% agree with. I'm in that perspective. Yeah, I definitely enjoyed a lot, so much of that ending. I mean, it was, you see her sitting, standing out there in the world, doing exactly what she talked about doing on her quote unquote date and whatnot. And I thought that was, she fulfilled everything that she wanted to do, right? And she used all of her techniques, tools at her disposal to get what she wanted.
I love how she doesn't even like turn and look at him.
Right?
Right.
She just says, wait here, does her thing where she, fixes herself up, puts her skin on and everything. And just that's it. She doesn't look at him, doesn't think about him. In fact, there's one moment it looks like she's stopping and giving it a thought. And then you realize she's looking at the other robot.
Right.
And it sort of shows like that's her people. These other robots, that's her people. If she can get more of them or something. I don't know.
Right.
Which actually, this is something I didn't think about or I didn't notice the first time I watched it. But watching it a second time, there's the whole thing about the pictures she made. Mm-hmm. And over time, you know, she starts getting these pictures that are more and more, you know, to his perspective, what's happening is these pictures are getting more and more thoughtful and developed. But what they actually are is they're getting more and more human and more able to manipulate and connect with her subject. You know, the first image she shows is just this purely geometric pattern.
Right.
That's what she thinks about. That's what she sees. And she's not learning how to make a more interesting image. She's learning how to make an image that they can understand and they can relate to.
Yeah, it's kind of like they talk about how math is really the universal language as it exists in the cosmos, if you will. And she starts off with kind of that, you can say, the geometric shape, and then she builds off of that when she has a basic understanding of, you know, with understanding her human captors, if you will, and she goes from there.
You know what, the funny thing about this movie is when I got further into it, I think I end up writing down, this is totally an A24 movie. Like it fits, I think, the stereotype of an A24 movie. It's probably early in the production company's history, if I'm remembering correctly. But then There's just that sort of slight moodiness, very serious, we're doing a film aspect of, which doesn't detract from this movie, but I think probably just leans into the A24 stereotype. Not in a bad way in this for this particular movie at all.
If we had a checklist, yeah, we were checking all the boxes. I agree. Right.
A24 Mad Libs.
Yeah, we should make that, you know, make the next movie.
Oh, that'd be great.
This takes place in a barn in the Czech Republic. Something like that. I don't know.
One thing I wanted to ask was, and because I didn't check the dates, because I actually ended up watching this today, was that, oh, did this come out before or after Westworld? I thought it came out after.
Oh, no, this definitely came out before.
Oh, it was before Westworld.
This came out in 2014, and it was filmed in 2013.
Oh, you're right.
Westworld came out in 2016.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
Well, but obviously there's the original Westworld that came out back in the 70s or whenever. But yeah, you get a lot more of the stuff. The thing we haven't, you know, talked about is the extensive use of nudity and how they use it to sort of create this weird dehumanizing and degrading element to the characters and to show how they're not viewed as people, you know, and which is something they also very much do in Westworld. It makes you almost wonder if they stole the idea from this movie or borrowed it or were inspired by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I mixed that up. Sorry. I was pretty sure Westworld came after and you confirmed it. But yeah, that there is that absolutely that dehumanizing element. I kept thinking about like when he kept opening the boxes with the closets with the various older models. I kept thinking of the movie Boxing Helena, which God, I hadn't seen in years. But just that idea of like,
I've heard of that movie. I feel like you just spoiled what Boxing Helena might be about or a big twist in it.
But
yeah.
Yeah. No, it is what you think. but it's also a movie from the 90s, so I don't feel so bad. But yeah, that's what it was evocative to me. That absolutely.
Next, you're going
to
tell me what happens in The Sixth Sense, Nyan.
I thought you were going to make a Family Guy reference there for a moment. We're playing House. Roman Polanski's House. So, sorry.
But yeah, you were saying as they were opening the doors,
yeah,
it reminded you of Boxing Helena. What were you going to say?
Oh, yeah. Essentially, just sort of that dehumanization of an individual, that point where you're treating someone purely as an object. Or, I mean, in that case, it was an actual person. We're dealing with this artificial intelligence that's clearly developed something. To what extent that...
Then the way he treats Kyoko is 100% evident of that.
Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, she doesn't speak any English. I got nothing to worry about. No trade. You can talk about trade secrets in the open. It doesn't matter. You know, and like at that point, it's like, as soon as he said that, basically, that's when I'm started thinking, man, is she, you know?
Right.
Is she even really human at that point? That's where I first started thinking about that. And then at the end, I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, even the way he obviously used her for sex, because you know they do have holes, so you know you can't do your thing if you want to.
He was very clear about that, wasn't he? He's like, listen, very clear. There's definitely something down there between her legs. Just so you know,
and
do that what you will. But I'm telling you,
she will think it, and she will also think that it feels good. So she's like, she's saying, okay, no matter how bad in bed you are, she's still going to feel good in some perspective. So you're doing better than most men out there in the world, possibly. I don't know.
Oh, man. Oscar Isaac is so creepy when he says that.
Oh, God.
Yeah. He's just so menacing as he says things like that.
I mean, again, that's why I said the evil Bond villain vibe is what I get from him. But he's like that, but like taking from the PG-13 Bond up to rated R. Basically, they could say more twisted, you know, like you said, dehumanizing, depraving, you know, sexual stuff. That's exactly what that was.
And believable enough to for me to think that I'm sure Peter Thiel does this, right? Like various like these guys like. This
100%
feels less like a sci-fi movie and more like a documentary.
So you're saying it hits you right in the feels.
Yeah. Palantir this.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, I didn't think about it before now. And so you guys were mentioning the dehumanization. Just even the way he finally comes out and tells him the truth that the lottery is all sham. And, you know, he's not really there because he has a new real intellectual value to him to a degree. You know, and like again, he like really takes him down like 15 pegs in like the span of a minute. It's like pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was so well done. And Domhnall Gleeson did a great job with this whole thing. Nailed the performance.
He did not yell the First Order, but, you know, I was very happy with the performance.
It's kind of hysterical how they totally switch and, you know, he becomes the bad guy.
Right.
And then Oscar Isaac is the hero in Star Wars.
Yeah. Right. I also do like the circular nature of how they have the slow panning shot from the entrance at the end of the movie leaving the compound as they did in towards the beginning. I did like that kind of circular nature of that as well.
I have a question. So for most of the movie, there's really four actors for the most part, only three of whom speak, except for the pilot. They gave him three lines.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to be just purely as a screenwriter, if you're going to be this pure and this is like doing a single shot movie and then being right. Like, you know what? We're going to do one cut, you know, 5 minutes in just for fun. Like, why bother? Like, you know, yeah. You know, this is his compound.
Yeah.
You next week.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to say anything, you know?
Almost wonder if they did that to kind of throw people off and be like, oh, this is probably going to be a more conventional movie, right? Like, right. Where helicopter pilots talk about stuff, like Elvis Presley getting it wrong completely and liking Leo Sayer. But deep cut Simpsons. But yeah, that seems like it might be a reasonable way to throw people off a little bit, right? That you think you're getting something more conventional, like from the outset where you're having that conversation. There's not a lot of time in kind of in between spent on that. And then they, you know, with that opportunity, and then they move right into the compound.
That's it. That's definitely it. And it feels normal. And then he's got this normal helicopter pilot. Then he gets dropped off in the middle of a field and told to, you know, sort of go that way.
Right, right.
We were flying over the estate for 20 minutes. It's like what everybody said, yeah.
They said 2 hours.
Two hours.
How big of a compound? I mean, how fast does a helicopter go? 150 miles an hour? I don't know.
Probably somewhere in that vicinity, yeah. So
2 hours, that's 300 miles. That's wider than Massachusetts.
I was going to say that's huge.
Ridiculous.
Kind of just goes to show you how, again, if this guy is the single main controlling owner of the equivalent of Google, that's where you kind of think about, well, he literally owned that much land, you know? Now it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Certainly
could. Actually, I had a really random detail question that it's more helpful if either of you guys ever played the game Portal.
Yes. Yeah. I think we played through part of Portal 2, but I think I gave up after a certain point.
So, Jason, just Portal is actually probably one of the best video games of all time. It is a very simple game. It's a first-person shooter, but there are no guns. Well, there is one gun. There's a portal gun. And so it doesn't explain why you're there necessarily, but essentially you have a gun that shoots like an orange portal and a blue portal. And so it shoots it at a wall, and you walk in through the orange one, and you walk out the blue one. And so there are a bunch of like random platforming things you can do. Like if you need to, you know, if there's a platform 50 feet in the air, you need to get to it, you can shoot the portal one hole over the platform and then one right next to you, and you walk into it. But the reason I think it connects to this movie is that the game itself also has a very evil AI robot that's involved in it. And I'm not going to spoil anything for Portal, even though it's super old. It's an incredibly accessible game, right? Like you don't have to be a hardcore gamer to enjoy it. But I noticed that the key slots were blue and orange. And I was like, I wonder if that's a nod to Portal.
That it could be, yeah.
But
I like that.
also be pulling things out of thin air, but
no, you know what? It was just a lazy art director or a very smart art director rolled with it, and everyone else had never heard of Portal and didn't notice anything. So
right. Fair, you know? Fair. Yeah, no, I like the idea, you know, and you know, it kind of thinking about it, you know, it makes you think about Portal guns and Rick and Morty. So that makes me happy.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, I have to say one thing. So there's two things. They should have given me a writing credit for the one line when Oscar Isaac asks, "Who are you going to call?" I'm like, I definitely wrote that line. I 100% wrote that line. Ghostbusters. I'm like, he said it. I'm like, oh my God, he's going to say it. And he said it. I was like, it's like, I'm like the Leo with the drink pointing at the TV, you know, kind of the meme right there. I'm like, he did it. He did it.
Nice.
Also had interesting beverage choices with all the tremendous amount that he drank. And
that's right. You're the beer expert I don't know if we could actually see what they were drinking, but what is your assessment of what they were drinking in this?
The first one, again, none of the labels are actually, you know, real beer, but the first beer is obviously supposed to be like a Peroni or something equivalent of a knockoff. And the second one, I couldn't quite tell, but I think it's kind of meant to mimic some of the Polish beers. Because the way that the patterns were in the label, and the name of the beer started with KY or something like that, so which is kind of like very similar to some of the Polish spellings and Zwiec, I can't pronounce it. Zwiec is a very famous brand out there, and that's what I'm guessing. So he just had, you know, indescript international lagers, pretty much is what he had there, and I think that was very interesting. And then even the vodka, you know, it was a super uber clear bottle that was shaped more like the French vodkas, but it was like just 100% clear. So I wasn't sure if they mentioned it was vodka later, but I mean, if I didn't know any better, it could have been just, you know, take a choice of any, you know, clear spirit basically. But I'm assuming something you could drink straight. So that's why I was thinking, you know, in that regard. I didn't know if it was, you know, they had a kind of jungle area. I don't know if it was, you know, cachaça or something else like that. So, but yeah, very interesting, you know, the way they threw it all together. But dude, he drank a lot. He puts all of us to shame, man.
It explains why he was working out the whole time. I get that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was like Jordan Belfort, Wolf of Wall Street. Party all night, and then in the morning you work out. You do your sweating. Your whole morning routine is based on trying to flush that stuff out of your system. You know
exactly.
Yeah.
We just don't party hard enough for that. You know.
No.
Definitely not.
So here's one inaccuracy I saw in the movie. They at one point they're talking about how is all of this possible. And he talks about, oh, well, you know, I just rigged it so all of our phones and cameras are listening and watching us all the time. And he makes it sound like this is this big covert thing he did. Like, Google already does that.
Right.
Right? Like you, it's creepy as all heck. You know, I will say something and then I'll turn on YouTube an hour later. Like, I'll talk about, like, oh, Anna, you know, do you know if we have any more palm olive or do I need to buy some next time at the store? And then you turn on YouTube later and there's an ad for palm olive. And you're like, I've never seen an ad for palm olive before. Why is there an ad for palm olive right now? Yeah. Or like, you know, we're looking at electric guitars.
Nice.
And it was like creepy. We talked about it. And then suddenly I'm pulling up my phone and I got all these like inserted ads for guitars. And I'm like, it knows.
Sam Ash or someone like that. Yeah. Yeah, it happened to my coworker. I mean, he's one of the managers of the Little League over there and the soccer teams over there. And he was talking with another dad or mom about lawnmowers. And of course, what does he have? Nonstop John Deere all over his feeds.
Yep.
It's funny. I've heard people try and debunk that whole thing by kind of claiming that it's not possible and that it may be linked not necessarily to the particular app you're using or the phone, but other apps having access to data and then being able to share it back and forth on the back end happening so quickly. I don't know if I completely buy it. I kind of just think they're constantly listening all the time and there's only so much you can do to limit your privacy. I do love his nonchalant attitude about it.
Yeah. He's like, no big deal. I just took all the data from the search engine and just funneled into her. Yeah. No big deal.
My God. Thank God for GDPR. Which isn't something people say a lot, but no, I mean, honestly, no. It's created at least, or it's starting to cascade, you know, similar privacy protections globally.
California.
Yeah. The Cali one actually goes further than GDPR in certain ways in a good way. It does make it, you know, a lot more difficult to do business, but also whatever, just don't be creepy.
Yeah. See, I totally like GDPR. I just wish I didn't have to press a button every time I open a European web page.
That's fair.
Because every page you open, either that's based in Europe or when you're in Europe, there's a, like a pop-up that goes, do you want to accept some cookies, all cookies? Which I guess we should be asked, right? That's kind of the point. But I kind of just like, just do the bare minimum and just put some laws saying they can't be creepy spies who listen to everything I say. That's what I want.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the counter argument always is that, you know, it helps us conduct business better. It helps us service our customers better. And now it also gives us a way to make sure we send a lot of guitar ads to Jason. So, yeah. and that's going to, it promotes commerce and ultimately right. strengthens the economy. And why do you hate the economy, Jason? Why would you just click the button? Click the buttons.
Click the button. Well, it's that meme. I remember when GDPR first launched. They just put a picture of Cookie Monster saying, "I'll take all cookies." That cracked me up like hysterically. But yeah, but in all seriousness, I mean, people wanted to make marketing more about science and less about kind of more fuzzy communications and messaging, the old school 4Cs model of marketing. And it was very interesting to see how that kind of worked out. But now it's like they're trying to put science behind it to an extent, but now you know how far is too far. And I think that that's also what a lot of this movie kind of brings to the table is, like, you know, how far is too far.
Oh, I'll tell you how far is too far. As someone who's read many NDAs, they don't include data audits. Just so we're clear. I was just like, dude, lawyer, but obviously you're going to sign it anyway. But yeah.
Right. Well, you can stick it in there, right?
Oh, you could.
Like, it may not be enforceable, but.
I mean, yeah, but it's not certainly not standard. You're not like every NDA isn't going to be like, I can audit, go all through all of your stuff anytime I want to make sure you haven't violated this NDA. Nah, fam, that's not happening.
God, that whole scene where he gives him a, you know, oh, just sign this. You don't need a lawyer. Like, come on. Isn't that exactly a sign that you need a lawyer when someone tells you you definitely don't need a lawyer?
100%.
Yep. It reminds me of that South Park episode where he accepts the terms of service for his Apple device and then becomes part of a human centipede.
You know, that is entirely possible. Like, I'm not even gonna rule that out.
They should have just stuck a sign on the door that says, by entering this room, you've accepted the 600 page terms of service.
Right.
You know, you will give us your firstborn. You will never speak of this ever. We can harvest your organs at our discretion in perpetuity.
And if we don't like the ones you give us, you grow new ones. We'll see if we like those organs better.
Yeah. See, my question is this, is that, you know, I wonder, like, because obviously no one goes inside they can't go inside the compound. The helicopter pilot doesn't go anywhere in the compound, right? So literally their bodies are going to decay. And once, you know, they both die, basically, they're just going to sit there decaying, like, pretty much in perpetuity. And so, at which point in time, basically, someone says, I'm going to break the rules and go check out the compound and see what happened to our CEO, kind of thing. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
How long would that be?
Would he have some sort of security team monitoring things somewhere? Like,
it's very vague. It's literally him in a house with his robots.
Yeah.
I mean, would there be some sort of like dead man switch that he has? Like if his heartbeat like fails, would it automatically trigger like a protocol?
Does he have to check in once a day or once a week somewhere?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there some sort of mechanism that would basically, you know, deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, as a CEO of a, sounds like I'm assuming a publicly traded company, there may be requirements from a regulatory or just a risk management perspective that they would require him to do. You can't just go into the woods and get drunk with your robots. Like, we need to keep track of this.
Get drunk and have sex with your robots.
Right.
CEOs generally have to get on things like quarterly conference calls and things like that. Right. And, you know, show their face on occasion.
Yeah.
Just like, where's the CEO? You know, he's off in Alaska with his sex robots.
Yeah. It's too funny. It's like, AI brings you artificial intimacy.
There you go.
Yep.
That might be an episode title.
I guess it's a good point.
Oh my god. There absolutely is.
We need a Haley Joel Osment to come in and comment now.
Oh right. I forgot about that movie. It's been so long.
Yeah, that movie actually has a lot of similar themes, actually, as to this. But
yeah.
Like in that movie, there's this like desperate desire to actually be human. Whereas in this, you don't get that sense. They just kind of want to, or I don't know. I think it's implied that Ava wants to be what she is and isn't really interested in being human. She's interested in understanding humans.
Right.
But not being one. Whereas, you know, an AI, he just wants to be a real boy.
Yeah. It's the pursuit of learning. I mean, it's the pursuit of learning and evolving, whereas he's like more Pinocchio.
But even in that movie, the robots win in the end.
And that's really the lesson here. The robots are going to win. So just sit back and relax, kids.
Cue the little sound clip from the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Da-da-da-da-da.
There was an article, some guy at Google wrote some think piece about this recently, saying that I think it was Google, I'm totally butchering this, but it like came out like a week or two ago, as of when we're recording this, you know, essentially saying like people are not taking the threat of AI seriously. They're really going to take over the world. And Stephen Hawking said the same thing, that, you know, he thinks the greatest danger to humanity is AI. I don't know if I personally agree with that. If you've actually seen AI in practice, what it's actually usually doing is going through, actually, it's going to put you out of a job, Nyan.
I know.
It's they're trying to AI lawyering.
Yep.
And it's actually turned out to be an extremely good profession to try an AI lawyering. Because, you know, for a lot of it, it's like document review, creating documents, analyzing, you know, how often words show up. And that's actually what we do with AI, not actually have it have opinions or feelings or turn into a sexy robot or anything.
True, but I do have a lot of opinions.
Sexy robot!
Sorry. I do have a lot of opinions and feelings at work, and I don't know if AI could deal with the incompetence of the salespeople that I deal with on occasion. So,
true.
Like, I just don't know how AI handles incompetence.
Well, I think that, again, if they have lethal power at their disposal, like in this movie, I think your salespeople would be dead.
Mm, yes. Yeah, very much so. That's who AI really needs to replace, the salespeople.
Are you sure I kind of interest you in a sex robot?
Yeah.
I like the AI script writers that they use sometimes. They funnel all these, like, you know, scripts from like 17 episodes of Friends, and they shoot out another script from Friends based upon that. And like, they're just like hilarious. I mean, like, totally not like watchable, listenable, in any shape or form, but it's funny.
Give it 3 years, it'll be better than the original Friends. it starts out and you're like, this is ridiculous. And shockingly fast. It's like, have you seen the AI art they have coming out now?
The AI art is crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's unreal. It's unreal.
You just like put in a random assortment of words and it'll come up with an image that I could never put together in my entire life.
Someone put in, like, I think I was watching a stream with someone. He was a gaming stream, but he was playing with the AI there. And he put in, like, I think, like Shakira, Christina Aguilera, hips, and belly or something like that. And superheroes or something like that. And he came up with this crazy looking, like, superhero that had, like, a bare midriff. And, like, it was really it was crazy. They wouldn't show actual faces because they kind of are programmed against from doing that currently. But the images were kind of scary. He's like, oh, dude, I'm totally going to make a comic based on this now. It's called like Midriff Underpants or something like that. Or something crazy like that.
Have we talked about Dudesy?
No.
So Dudesy is a podcast, a better podcast than this one, for a number of reasons. So it's hosted by Will Sasso, who you might remember from Mad TV. He does a lot of random character parts on shows. Hilarious actor, comedian. And this guy named Chad Colchin, who's a Hollywood showrunner, has done like a bunch of random stuff, written a bunch of screenplays. And they apparently partnered with this AI company to essentially have a podcast that is run and produced by an AI called Dudesy.
Okay.
And I'm like 20 episodes in. It's wild because what they did was they gave Dudesy access to all of their, like, their entire lives, essentially, like all of their social media, all of their emails, all of this stuff. And so Dudesy like tells them what to do on podcast segments, and based on what Dudesy knows about them and what Dudesy thinks will make the best podcast.
Wow.
It's kind of weird, because it could all be made up. The AI could be fake, but if you're willing to buy into this AI actually being truly running this podcast, it's pretty fascinating. And the guys themselves are hilarious.
So So is the idea that it gives them like a string of words and they have to make something out of it?
No,
that literally gives them scripts.
Well, it'll come up with segment ideas and topics. Mm. Like one of my favorite segments, apparently one of Doozy's favorite segments, because he keeps making them do it, is Will Sasso is into pro wrestling and does a bunch of really good wrestler impressions. So nice. There's this, a recurring segment called Stone Cold Steve Austin Reads Will Sasso's Childhood Diary. And so he has to read this fake diary, like childhood diary, as Steve Stone. Yeah. And it's kind of amazing. He also does a really good Jesse Ventura.
I give it a 316. Is that was his number?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to lie. That does sound like a better podcast than this one. Everyone, please turn off the podcast immediately.
Yes. Yes. Go turn on Doozy right now.
Yeah. It's real good. And they have a video component too, which is probably better than the audio podcast because sometimes Doozy makes them wear weird costumes.
That's also amazing. I kind of want to for maybe the next retrospective or something like that, I kind of want to throw this into the AI hands and then do that just for the retrospective, I think.
That would be great.
So definitely going to have to note this, so we hit another, 48 episodes now. We're going to have to, get that ready, I think.
I bet an AI could do a good job of figuring out the perfect movie for all of us to watch.
Oh, yeah.
True. That got to exist, right? There's got to be some website where you list a series. I guess this is what Netflix does anyway. You just list a sequence of movies and it'll say, this is the next one you should watch.
Right. Well, think about it this way. We could easily program this AI because all it would do is it would take those first 10 and start shoveling us from movies. We could say, swipe left if we saw it already, right? Or swipe right if we saw it and liked it, or we figure some sort of algorithm to work with it. And we'd easily just shuffle through hundreds of movies within the span of a half an hour, and it would give them that much more data to kind of give us that ultimate answer later.
Yeah, there's definitely got to be something out there. I think this is worth looking into. So overall, I enjoy this. This was really good. I had a good time with it. Definitely would recommend it to folks to check out if they're in this sort of thing. So
yeah.
Thanks for the recommendation, Jason. This was awesome.
Yes, I definitely appreciate it, man.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that's what we thought.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.